Hi guys, this is Anna Lakin with Enlightened Transitions, presented by Applegate & Dillman Elder Law. And with me today, I have Beth Bigham. Thank you so much for coming today, Beth. Beth is with Comfort Care Home Care on the south side of Indy. And she is here to talk to us about 30 questions that you should ask your home care agency.
Well, thank you, Anna, for having me today.
So I just want to jump right in, because coming from somebody who I see families utilizing home care all the time, whether they're utilizing it in the right way or not, I don't know, but I'm excited to hear some of these questions that you have developed. And I know we won't have time to touch on all of them today, but I definitely want to get into some of these that you think are super important. So why don't you get us started, Beth?
Okay, well, there's four main sections, and this list has been compiled by looking at a lot of different companies tooting the questions you should ask a home care agency. And then I found, as a home care owner, I kept going, there's more questions that are important. So I've composed this list, four different categories: compliance, safety, care, and finances. And the first one being compliance.
Okay, so why don't you jump right into compliance? What do you mean by compliance?
So in Indiana, you should be a licensed home care company with the state. Which means when you set up your shingle, you have done, cross your T's and dot your I's, and the FSSA, Family Social Services Administration, understands who you are and that you have the correct procedures in place to run a home care company and that you have the insurance and whatnot.
Okay, that makes sense. So what questions could somebody ask as it relates to compliance?
Well, first one is, obviously, are you licensed by the state? And in Indiana, you have to be relicensed every year. Okay. So when your anniversary date comes up, they're going to be sending you a letter stating you need to recertify that you have all your insurance and everything is in place, and who the owners are, who your managers are, and you fill out the paperwork every year. Sometimes it might change. You might change different different managers, and you resubmit to the state, and they'll give you every year a new number.
Oh, okay. So when it comes to that license piece, why do you feel that is important? Like, what's the difference between a company that is licensed and isn't?
Well, the big one really is insurance.
Okay.
And that's what sets us apart from everybody else who's doing kind of side work under the table, is that we document that we have the workman's comp insurance, we have the liability insurance, and our caregivers are bonded insured. And also that we do what the state requires and do the proper background checks and vet them properly, so that when we hire a caregiver, and home care agencies in general hire caregivers, that they have deemed them, as best as they can tell, to be very good caregivers.
Okay, that makes sense. Do you have other compliance questions you think somebody should ask?
Are you certified by Medicare and Medicaid? A lot of home care companies can open up their doors and just take private pay cases. Families are paying out of pocket, but some home care companies go off and be certified to take Medicaid cases and work with what we call in our industry AAAs, Areas Agency on Aging. And so that's a whole different process. Or possibly they become a skilled home care agency and they may go as far as to accept Medicare, which is kind of rare.
Yeah. So what about when it comes to safety? When you, like, describe the difference between compliance and safety in your mind.
So the compliance piece is this: the FSSA has documented steps that we must do to be compliant, the rules and regulations to open our shingle. That's kind of more about compliance. The safety is to make sure that caregivers are safe and they're doing everything safely as possible to keep themselves safe and have the training to keep the client safe. So it's a more of a personal safety training.
Not so much a business entity, but more so on the caregiver. That makes sense. So what could somebody ask about safety when looking into home care?
There's a lot of questions, actually, Anna. The top on the list is, what process do you use to hire and assess your caregivers? And historically, a lot of home care companies may do like a 60-question test to test the knowledge of a caregiver on, say, high salt, dietary questions, lifting, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
We do a different test now. It's called Millamot, which is French for 1,000 words. And instead of the boring 60-question test, our caregiver applicants have to answer 5 questions, and mm-hmm. they have a potential to upload 2 different pictures. So it'll gauge if they are really of the caregiving heart, that they have that caregiving capacity in them.
Yeah.
Because everything else really could be, educated
right.
during the orientation.
It could be learned. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
So what do you use to hire? We follow the state guidelines. We can do the national, and we do the national, state, local background checks. And, our company also will test, are they on the no-fly list? Are they licensed to carry a gun? And other 10 different little points.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah.
That's really smart. So I did have a question that somebody asked me, and I don't know the answer. If you do that background check, does it check only for felonies, or is it felonies and misdemeanors?
Felonies and misdemeanors, because it makes a big difference.
It really does. It does. Yeah. Because sometimes, I don't know, a person's not been convicted for a felony, but maybe their charge is something that you should know about. So
right. And you can have a felony with traffic violations.
Uh-huh.
And that was kind of surprising to me when I first got started. I'm like, how do you have a felony with traffic violations? And they, well, if you have too many points and you have a bench warrant.
That's crazy.
So and we take that into consideration. No felonies is what our insurance company says. However, if it's something like 10 years ago and your MVR record is now clean, that stuff should be tossed out the window.
Right, right. No, that makes sense. So what else other than kind of background checks and stuff do you think you should look into for safety?
The pre-employment screening, what does it look like? That's a question we get asked. And so I tell my recruiter, you really do need to check work history, because sometimes they'll give you a phone number and it could be their friend.
Right.
Answering the questions that you give them. And so we'll go, okay, forget these phone numbers. We're going to, Google the company address and look up their phone number and then
right.
ask for HR and get the real life person. And if
right.
we can't have at least a couple of viable work background checks, then we really have to question, should we hire this person or not?
Right. No, that makes sense. When you're looking into safety, so on the consumer side, looking to hire,
mm-hmm.
What else could I ask other than the hiring process?
How do you evaluate your caregivers? And that is a good question we get asked. I think our Millamot testing has really brought in a really good pool of caregivers, but then we give them 2 days of orientation.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, we're not a skilled home care agency, so we don't certify the caregivers as home health aides, but our orientation period is 2 days, and we do give them ample time to learn the business. So we're going to evaluate them by, watching them during orientation. Are they on their cell phones a lot? Are they goofing off? Because what they do in orientation tells us a lot how they're going to perform in the home.
Right, when nobody has eyes on them right. like that.
And so we'll give them fair warning. We kind of tell them this is kind of like your second interview in essence. So they smile and nod, but sometimes they'll forget.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're on their cell phone a lot, or they're talking while the presenter's talking, or they're not paying attention, we may not actually put them out on a case, and we just may table it right then and there and say, thank you for coming in.
Right.
Because we don't need that
yeah.
going on in a client's home either.
Right. Who trains them at your, in your workplace? Who trains them?
Right now, it's basically a 3-part person. We give them, everybody in the office who's in the office when orientation starts can pop in and say hello. I start the orientation about what Comfort Care is, what we're about, a little bit of the history and what we're trying to achieve, and give them a good background. And then my recruiter, Nikki, she'll do a lot of the paperwork part of it. Mm-hmm. A little bit boring, but we have to do it.
Yeah.
And we incorporate videos. We do two video filming of dementia and towards the latter part of the first day. And then, depending on time, my nurse may pop in and start the next part. If not, she'll just jump right on in the second day. Usually they're going through and getting their TB test done the morning of the second day, which is usually Wednesday. And then she will take them and start really hands-on training them and testing them. If they're CNAs and HHAs and they know their stuff, the testing gets done pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But if, you know, they've never done home care and we can hire people who just love to care for people, she'll do more time hands-on training on how to change someone while they're in the bed and how to move them about, what a pull sheet is, and how to use the walker. We do cover Hoyer lifts, so we can't do Hoyer lifts in home care, a non-medical side, but she will cover it. And then she takes them out, and we have some nice clients who have agreed to be guinea pigs on
how to
assist on a shower. So they do a field trip to a client's house.
That's great. No, that's really good, because I think that hands-on experience is so important.
Yeah, and that gives my nurse a really good opportunity to see how they communicate with that client.
Yeah.
You know, is it just basic communication, like, can you do this, can you do that, or can they really engage that client? And that's what she's looking for.
Right.
She wants to see how they communicate. So, of course, when orientation's over with, she can share that information with my caregiver manager and give my caregiver manager a really good indication of which type of client would be best for that caregiver. If they don't have a lot of experience, maybe someone who's more a companion care client would be a better fit to start out with.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So do you have any other questions you think on safety that are worth asking?
How do you respond to emergencies?
Oh, that's a good one.
That is a really good one. We don't have them very often, knock on wood, but we are going to have them due to the nature of our business.
Right.
We've only actually had one client where the caregiver showed up and the client had passed away.
Oh, gosh.
So that was very sad.
Right.
But our protocol is documented, and 911, first thing, contact the nurse. Second, unless it's a hospice, we'll contact the hospice company first. And then we start notifying their emergency contacts.
Yeah.
So the client doesn't leave the scene and that kind of a scene.
Right.
If it's bodily injury, basically it's the same kind of thing. 911 first.
Right.
And then contact the office and we'll find the nurse.
Right.
And I haven't had too many of those, knock on wood.
That's great.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a question I wouldn't have even thought to ask. And I've had home care for my grandmother, so that's a great question.
Yeah, we had telling on ourselves, and I'll just be honest, we had one fall, a lovely lady, in fact she just passed away.
Oh gosh.
And the caregiver was so heartbroken because she had just caught her walker on the door jamb of the bathroom. She had to kind of pivot to get into the bathroom, and the caregiver was like two steps behind her, and the client fell because it kind of shook her walker and she didn't have a good grip. And she fell, and she had a bad scrape on her leg, and she had to go get it looked after. And the caregiver stayed with her the entire time.
Oh, good.
You know, stayed with her while she was being patched up, was in communication with the family, who, of course, lived a few hours away.
Right.
And she felt so horrible, and I thought, oh, my gosh, the family is going to really be upset with this caregiver, and we're going to have to find another caregiver. And, in fact, they became so close.
I was going to say, that communication alone would it build so much value.
That became a turning point where that caregiver, even though she moved to assisted living, that family kept her as a caregiver.
That's great.
And said, come every Saturday and check in on mom and just be a companion to her and do whatever she needs. And she just passed away not even a month ago, but they were together for 3.5-4 years.
That's wonderful. That's good. That says a lot, because I feel like when you get in the right place with the right care company, you'll stick with them for such a long time. But when you're not, you are like a, like you just got to keep bouncing around. And so that time, that's awesome. So you said that you have a list of questions under the care side. And I feel like these are probably the questions that people think of, and the finance, of course, most. But what have you put together as the questions you should ask regarding care?
So sure. You know, a lot of times people are asking us questions. They're focused on, you know, do you have, you know, surveillance cameras? Do you have a portal we can communicate? But it kind of surprises me they don't ask some of these questions, like what specific services do you provide? Because when you become a licensed home care agency, especially with Medicaid, you indicate what all you will do.
Right.
And not everybody's the same. So you can't ever assume. Some home care companies I found don't want to do housekeeping.
Huh.
Yeah, they'll do the personal care, but they don't want to house clean. And I tell families jokingly, you know, oh, they're not Merry Maids.
Right.
But
which they're not. But
yeah, they're not, but they'll do the light housekeeping, and we cover, right, you know, what they'll do. The dishes, the laundry, the sheets, the sweeping, the dusting, as long as they're not lifting heavy furniture.
Right.
Or doing yard work. Some home care companies may pay people's bills, help them pay bills.
Oh.
Yeah. Our insurance says no. Yeah, we advise you don't do that.
Right.
Most we can do is hand them the checkbook.
Uh-huh.
And then they have to write their own bills out, at least go get them the stuff. But we don't reconcile. Some companies don't transport.
Oh.
So they say no. Too much of a liability. We won't put you in a car. We won't transport you to the doctors.
Hmm.
At Comfort Care, we do. So we will transport. Another question might be, are you certified in any specialty?
Yeah.
Good question.
That is a good question.
Comfort Care South does have a certification in our program with the corporate office called DementiaWise. And in fact, we're in the middle of being recertified. Because it's an updated program, corporate wants us to get recertified, so we're going through that currently. Comfort Care does have a partnership with the Alzheimer's Foundation, so we're going to go through their testing,
right,
and pass, and have all the office people
certified
through that training program.
That. Right? No, that's great. That's a good question.
Will my parent have the same caregiver every time? I love that question.
Yeah.
It's important. And my answer is, it depends.
Yeah.
To be honest. Because, you know, if your dementia, or if you're a case that has longer hours.
Right.
The focus is going to be keeping that caregiver with that client for as long as possible.
Yeah.
Because statistically, if we have that caregiver and client combination together, that caregiver is going to understand, oh, this client is talking gibberish today. They might have a UTI. And so, and they know the routine.
Right.
Because it's okay to make food for someone, but how they like their food made is a whole different ball game. We do try to keep them together for as long as possible. Smaller hour cases honestly become kind of that, what's the word I'm thinking of? The fall guy, to have their schedule change.
Yeah.
A little bit, because
right,
on the flip side, my scheduling team is trying to give that caregiver 40 hours or whatever makes them happy. So it's the smaller cases that become the ones that are easier to put a different caregiver in.
Right, right.
Just to kind of piece it together.
Exactly, exactly.
So, unfortunately, that's just home care.
Well, and I can see that, too, on the other side. Somebody who needs around-the-clock, 24-hour care, same thing. You can't have somebody at your house for 24 hours, and so
right,
you're going to change that up. There will be a change in there.
Yeah, we specialize in trying really, really hard to keep the caregiver and the client together for as long as possible. But people have to understand, in home care in general, we are kind of guided by things outside of our control.
Right.
Had a caregiver just yesterday morning actually text me and saying, oh, well, I was going to go into CNA class starting the 18th of this month, and there was an opening, so I'm starting today, and I'm sorry, I'm turning in my notice right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the workforce we are in right now. I was just talking to somebody how hard it is to get somebody to work every single day and come in and interview. So some of that is not in your control. There's nothing you can do there.
Yeah, there are things beyond our control, and we do what we can to understand. We definitely understand.
Right.
And we tell them at the get-go, hey, this may be a stepping stone if you want to become a CNA or a doctor or a nurse, physical therapist, whatever. We do understand. We're not going to get mad if you want to better yourself.
Right.
We just ask for the professionalism you give us notice so your clients don't go without care.
Right.
And then they forget about that clause, that mm-hmm. statement, and they think, oh, well, this is a, you know, at will state in Indiana. I can quit because they can fire me at any time.
Right.
So I can quit at any time. But if you're both being professional.
Yeah.
What's the problem? Because our caregivers are not just cut. Right. I mean, they know they're messing, you know, they could be messing up, because we'll bring them in and we give them like a 30-day reboot. It's a very positive counseling experience with mm-hmm. my caregiver manager. Go, hey, look, we know you're super busy and you're working a lot of hours, and yet you have a personal life, but we've had a comment that your client thinks you're on the cell phone too much.
Right.
And we've had some excellent caregivers get caught with that.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. I have been. And they'll cut it out. So we'll counsel them to say, this is what we're hearing. You tell us what you think is going on. And we put together a game plan to say, okay, this is what we can do to move forward to make your life easier. So you can stay with us.
Right.
If it's cutting your hours, rearranging your hours, whatever.
Right.
And so we make it a positive experience. So we don't just fire anybody out of the blue. So I don't understand why caregivers just jump, quit out of the blue.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, I wasn't raised like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So other than, will my caregiver always be the same, what other things do you think somebody could ask about care?
What happens if the caregiver doesn't show up? Or doesn't show up on time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a biggie.
Yeah, I bet.
We cannot, as seven of us in the office, we cannot, like, make them hop in our car and we take them to shift and be on time.
Right.
So we have to trust the caregiver to get there on time and clock in. And for the most part, they're very, very successful. Things do happen. With an answer and service that we have in place, the caregivers know if they can't get a hold of us in the morning, they can at least call the office and get our answering service, and the answering service will email us and say, so-and-so called, they're going to be 10 minutes late to work.
Mm-hmm.
Happened this morning, as a matter of fact. And I get to work at the office, and the phones had not been forwarded to my scheduler. I get a phone call from a client, and she's like, can you find out where my caregiver is at? Oh, sure. Let me find out who your caregiver is, and I'll give you a call back. As soon as I powered up my computer, I looked at my email, and there was the email from our answering service going, your caregiver called in and said she'll be 10 minutes late. So I texted the caregiver, and sure enough, she goes, I just arrived.
Oh, that's good.
So 99% of the time, the caregivers are going to communicate, and we just communicate with the client.
Right.
And when we start care, we let the client know, look, this is a human industry. You right. have to understand that things are going to happen. Cars aren't going to start. Babysitters get sick. Kids get sick, whatever.
Right.
Do we have that one or two caregivers just sitting in the office waiting to go on shift? No, we do not. Not cost prohibitive to do something like that.
Right.
So they need to understand that we will reroute a caregiver or find an open caregiver as soon as we can.
Right.
If it's that urgent, on occasion, office people have been known to go.
Mm-hmm.
I've been known to go. I was actually going to go today.
Wow.
Because we had some call-offs. I was going to do a two-hour shift before I got here to talk to you. depending on the level severity of care that that client needs.
Right.
If it's, you know, they're hungry for breakfast, we may run through drive-through, bring a breakfast and say your caregiver will be here in 45 minutes, but here's some food.
Right.
We've done that too.
So no, that's great that you guys are so flexible.
We have to be flexible in this industry to keep, because we want a good reputation and we want our clients to be cared for. We do what it takes. And we will say, look, you know, we'll ask at the very get-go of care, who do you have in the family as backup to our caregivers?
Right.
We'll get the time in. We'll get the time made up.
Right.
Unfortunately, it may not be in your time frame that you want, but we'll get the time made up. So who do you have? And so we'll start to gauge, are they a level 1, 2, or 3 client? And obviously the ones that are level 1 definitely need the care, so they become our priority.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. So I assume a lot of people have a lot of questions about how they can pay for this type of care. So what questions have you developed that people could ask when they are looking into care for a loved one?
So, yes, when we sit down and talk to a family, there are different multiple ways to pay for care. So it just depends on which option is their best option.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is a SOFA visit or care consultation, and we'll sit down with them. And we start with, you know, is anybody in the military? Do they have possibility of having the aid and attendance grant program pay for home care?
Right, yeah.
If that is not an option, then sometimes we'll look at the Medicaid eligibility and start talking about their Medicaid. If they're on traditional Medicaid, do they want to get on traditional Medicaid and all the options that, you know, that could curtail? If they not quite Medicaid eligible and they want to keep their home, sometimes maybe doing the Choice program, which is a block grant of money where they pay a smaller percentage of care.
Oh, wow.
Might be an option for them.
Right. No, that's neat. Do people ever have questions like about Medicare? Will Medicare pay for their care or anything? Does anybody ever ask that?
Actually, I've had people say, I talked to the Medicare office and they said home care is covered by Medicare.
Oh, gosh. Interesting.
Yeah, that made me smile. And the answer is, in a small way, it might. But a couple of years ago, you were limited to, once you come home like from the hospital and you've had surgery, you might get a shower visit twice a week. And you don't get to set the time. It's when the aide can come and you'll get your shower visits. That was the home care that people were talking about. But now with Trump signing into law a few years ago, 2-3 years ago, Medicare can pay for home care. We in the industry were like, well, how's that going to work? Because we home care companies, 99% of us aren't even certified to be able to bill Medicare. And
the
skilled agencies were like, but we have nurses and therapists. How are we going to do home care? We don't want to hire caregivers. We want to keep nurses and therapists.
Right.
So that's where the phrase Medicare Advantage comes in. So Medicare Advantage, MA programs, are ran by insurance companies like Anthem, United Healthcare, where the insurance company goes, okay, these are the home care benefits we'll offer our insured. And like Anthem, there's 10 different programs. One of them is the personal services benefit, which is their version of home care. So if you have Anthem MA, and you call Anthem and you ask, confirm, do I have the home care benefit?
Mm-hmm.
You can get 4-hour visits, I believe 26 or 31 times a year.
Oh, wow.
31 times a year.
Wow.
So even if you're a private pay client, even if you're on Medicaid, it doesn't matter.
Oh,
if
that's
you
neat.
Have that benefit.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed to help you get stronger from when you come home from the hospital.
Right.
And so the aide can come in and make you meals, remind you to take your medicine, do your housekeeping while you mend coming home from the hospital. That's kind of how why it was built.
Right. Now that makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you think people should ask about, like, that process? So if they're exploring aid and attendance, should they ask, will you do this for me, or do I have to find somebody? Like, do you think those are important questions to ask?
Oh, definitely, because it depends on the knowledge of the person doing the work.
Right.
Aid and attendance, I can't tell you if someone qualifies for it or not.
Right.
But there's a number of reputable companies out here that know the answer and know the process and can get it done much faster, mm-hmm. and they shouldn't bill you for it because it is a benefit for being a veteran.
Right. What about their, like, what if they have, like, long-term care insurance? Will you guys look into that, or do they have to call their long-term care insurance company? How's that work?
I like to do it together with the insured. There's a lot of questions calling into those insurance companies that they want you to jump through their hoops mm-hmm. to make sure you are the person who is supposed to call. Social Security numbers, birthdays, policy numbers, so on and so forth. So usually we do that phone call together mm-hmm. to make sure that either they or we would be reimbursed.
Right.
We have a form called Assignment of Benefits, an AOB, and if they have long-term care insurance, they can sign that form and say, no, insurance company will pay Comfort Care directly. And then I've seen some cases where the insurance wants to pay the insured, and the insured reimburses us.
Oh, that makes sense. What other questions do you think are important to ask when someone's looking into care as it relates to finance?
Do you require a deposit?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, that is a good question. Payroll being the largest expense that we have in home care, I don't care who you talk to, it is. A good, solid, reputable home care company would ask for a retainer uh-huh. or a deposit. It's money you don't lose. Standard is 2 weeks. So if you say, we want you to come 20 hours a week, so that's 20 times 2 weeks, that's 40 hours times the rate, that is your deposit.
That makes sense.
And Comfort Care, we can chart that. This is how much their deposit is. And I explain to the clients, that's your money. You're never going to lose it. So when you are done with care, if your hours have increased over the lifetime and we've never increased your deposit, you might still owe a little bit of money after we apply the deposit.
Right.
Or if something happened and someone had to go to the hospital and then they're just going to go to assisted living, depending on the time frame of the billing cycle, we may owe them money.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's right on the money and we just refund the retainer, which is happening today. I owe a client, a retainer, say $147. So out goes a check.
Yeah. So you mentioned 20 hours times the rate. What's the average going rate of a caregiver or in-home care right now?
In-home care? Right now, it's anywhere, I'd say, from $22 to $30.
Mm-hmm.
If you're hours of service is going to be a small amount, and like Comfort Care will do 1-2 hours of service, 1 or 2 hours if that client lives in independent or assisted living, because
mm-hmm.
the thought is if we're in the assisted living building and we have a caregiver doing a small amount, word gets out, we'll get more clients, and that caregiver just go from one apartment to another.
Right.
It's going to cost privately a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really just to offset the fact that that caregiver is going to have mileage reimbursed to them when they go on to the next client
right.
in the community. So right. it is a little bit more if you have smaller hours. And then as hours increase, a lot of us home care companies will decrease the rate.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. Have you put together any other finance questions? That deposit question was a good one.
What forms of payment do you take?
Yeah.
So, I've only been asked, can't I just pay the caregiver and let them bring you the money? No, no, no.
Oh,
caregiver cannot take money.
Right,
No cash. So, we very rarely allow a client to send a check. But if it is a real problem for them to just understand that a voided check will take care of an ACH, automated clearinghouse payment, where we'll pull the money from their checking account 10 days later, we'll let those smaller hour clients write us a check.
Yeah.
It's good practice to just accept a voided check so it can be automatically pulled 10 days after the date of the invoice or a credit card.
Yeah. Yeah, so, no, that makes sense. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, so what I'm going to do is I will take these questions and I'll make sure they are in the description so that if somebody's got these questions, they know that they can call you and you can provide them with an answer. But before we conclude, why don't you share with everyone what got you into home care?
Well, Anna, it's really two different stories combined to one. And I share this with all of my clients and my poor office people. They've heard the story. I was actually in the business world. I'm not a nurse. I grew up working in business, but my mom had her health situations where she ended up in a wheelchair using a stand-up lift, and dad did have home care for mom, but not 24/7, and he was a busy man. He was an executive, and so when he would do his like golf outings or traveling, we kids would come in and we'd come to help take care of mom. So I learned just on the job experience.
Yeah.
It's your mom, you go.
Right.
And I learned peri care and catheter bags and wear gloves and all of that equipment. So it's your mom, it's what you do.
Right.
So unfortunately dad passed away first and mom moved into an assisted living. And then a different one, and then her third and her last one until she passed from she had kidney failure. She passed away. So my dad passed away from brain cancer first, and then my mom 2 years later from kidney failure. So in that time period, after dad passed, I had, gone after my MBA thinking my company could use a smarter person. That didn't work out. They actually downsized me out of a job.
Oh, my goodness.
So I finished my MBA, and mom had died in the middle of doing that program, and they left us kids a nice nest egg, not bragging, it's just a fact. And so being downsized out of a job, I just did not entertain the idea of sitting in front of a computer anymore and typing away till I was 65. That did not thrill me anymore. So I said, I'm going to start a company.
That's great.
And I was like, well, what company, Beth? So I went looking, and Comfort Care was presented to me as an option. Met the corporate people, looked at the software, because that's kind of my background. And I just love their product. I love their philosophy and their mentality. And I'm like, I was like, I'm in. With
That's
my background,
great.
Taking care of my mom and growing up with visiting my grandparents and my great-grandparents all the time and having a good time with them, it was just like God had to put me through everything I went through to find Comfort Care.
That's great.
And home care. So I was like, I'm in. Let's get started.
That's
and within
wonderful.
Months, my daughter and I got the doors open and we took off. Our first client was a former co-worker's and we just
that's awesome
grew we just
right.
we just grew word of mouth advertising, brought on different people. Everybody has been special in our journey, and we made changes, and we now have a really great office group and a wonderful fleet of caregivers. They
that's
are just
great.
Awesome.
How many caregivers do you have?
I get that. I know our payroll's around 70, 79.
Oh,
I don't know.
Wow.
I just make sure the money's good. We're fine.
That's great. That's wonderful. Well, Beth, I really appreciate you coming on. If anybody wants to reach out to you, how can they reach you?
It's really easy. You can always Google Comfort Care South Indy. Our website is comfortcare.com/south-indy. Phone number is 317-664-5136. Or the email is southindy@comfortcare.com. COM F as in Frank, ORCARE, because that email will get to key office people, and we will jump on it. If I'm not here, someone else in the office will address the email concern and start assisting.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And for all of you listening, we will talk to you guys next week.